the Malays who were mainly the rulers, they were very happy with the 1941 constitution. A promise of democratization, a promise of doing away with autocratic rule by brute, and the promise of educating the masses so they can rule themselves.
Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. That was a clip from a documentary, Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. We have the team that made that documentary in our studios today. I'm very excited about that and the discussion we're going to have about the representation of Sarawak and that that history, sometimes a very contentious history. We'll also be going to Kuching with Ann Teo, who is with an organisation called RISE, of Sarawak Efforts, or ROSE as the acronym goes. And she's going to be telling us how she views representations of her native land that are coming from different parts of the world, including the peninsula. All that's happening this hour, so stay tuned to Let's Talk. We're going to begin with our guests, Ahmad Yazid, who's the director, Zof Azmi, who's a researcher on the project, and Chako Vadakes, who was the voice. And, you know, you all know how important the voice is in documentaries. You all remember the voice of the documentaries we watched as a young people. Yazid, I want to begin with you and this very important issue. I think, you know, as somebody who's a creative person, you know, before you went into the specific season, the one that you deal with Sarawak, what was your relationship to Sarawak, the territory, the name, the people, the cultures?
Well, I've been to Sarawak so many times in the past filming, throughout my career as documentary filmmakers, and I've always liked Sarawak. We've done many and a few about military shows, about Sarawak Iban trekkers. This was back in 2013, I think. And I've always liked about, you know, how the people were. You know, it's very different than Malaya, very different than Malay Chinese Indian. So I thought, okay, this is something different. It's much more, you know, a rich culture, you know, and then they don't have this, like, I'm Malay, I'm more superior, and, you know, and then you less, and they just don't, they have less of it. I wouldn't say they have nothing at all. So, again, of course, making Road to Nationhood was really about, the reason why I started is because I had issues with my school history book. So always hated it.
And we're going to come back to the question of textbooks later. But Zof, you could weigh in on this because and I'm very interested in your relationship, as I am with all of us here at the table, because this is a table essentially of non-Sarawakians. And the story that we're going to be talking about today is the story of Sarawak. We don't have a Sarawak voice in the studio. So what was your relationship to Sarawak before you began this project?
Well, I can tell you before 2008, and I was... Every time I had to travel to Sarawak, I used to be very annoyed that I had to pull out my passport and, like, get a little visa stamp saying you can't stay for more than a certain number of days. And I would say, why? We're all one country. Why do we have to do this? And then, of course, a couple of years after that, I marry my wife, who is Sarawakian and from Kuching, so I had to travel. Now I travel to Sarawak many times a year.
I think that in that personal relationship of yours, changed the way you viewed it? I mean, did she start to correct your views of the state?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, there's so much, that phrase, that the things you didn't know, you didn't know. And it's only when you learn more about it, and in the process of doing this documentary as well, I learned much more about the history of Sarawak, that you suddenly begin to appreciate certain things, you know, and how they... So this, for example, this business of having to produce your IC every time you come into Sarawak, now I have a context for that.
And does it assuage you? Are you less annoyed by the fact that you have to do this?
I think in principle, I'm still annoyed, but I understand. Understand. Why is that?
And understanding is a very important part towards finding a basis for a conversation, isn't it? Chako, what about you?
Well, I don't have any personal connection with Sarawak, but it was always this exotic place with headhunters and... jungles, but also a place where a lot of timber is cut and exploitation of the land and the peoples. But it's somewhere, a place that I've always been fascinated by, and I've just come back from the Mulu Caves, and it's my first time, and it's been on my bucket list, and I had a friend from Germany down, and we thought, okay, let's go do the Mulu Caves.
You know,
and it was
Mulu Caves are amazing. I went there 2 years ago, and I would recommend it to everybody. I do want to pick up on something you said, Charco. If you could respond to this question of the exoticization of Sarawak, the idea that we often are forced to, because of the way that, you know, National Geographic, for instance, might frame, you know, the flora and fauna of Sarawak as being the main, as it were, actor in the state, the exoticization of tribal peoples and people who live off the land, who live with the forest. Is that a problem? Do you have to somehow work against that already preconceived exotic view of Sarawak when you create something like a documentary?
It was not, really, because Road to Nation was a series of, you know, from the first season, it was always about politics. So moving on to that, I was hoping, and I really do hope that people find that, you know, this documentary, this series is actually really about telling the politics of a nation. And then it was not about their forests. It was not about what happened after 65. You know, it was really everything that happened before 65 and after the first, the Second World War. So it was not really an issue, per se.
Okay, Zof, in your work as a researcher, did you have to kind of also battle within yourself those images that are produced through, you know, Hollywood representations of Sarawak and the lands of the East and Asia? Is there something, were you conscious of this this kind of dimension of the problem?
Not, I mean, as well, one thing we do is we start with a lot of reading, and we read a lot, and I mean a lot of books. And by the way, I think I should mention that I'm only one of many researchers on the show, and
but he's the head researcher. So.
But I guess you very quickly get into the mindset of the historians, or in cases of James and Charles, you know, their letters and diaries, you know, and you start seeing things from that perspective as well. So, in that sense, no, not really, but. But the more you research, the more you read, the more you realize there's many different viewpoints of the same event, even. So that's
yeah.
Always...
So there's multiple viewpoints, and I think multiple narratives that we come to later on. Charco, you know, choosing your voice and choosing the tone in which to deliver a subject like history. I mean, there are many styles. There's easygoing style. There's a much more somber narrative. There's a voice of authority. What is the voice that you chose, or rather, what was the voice that Yazid told you to have?
Yes, Yazid chose.
Was it the voice of authority?
Sexy chuckle.
Oh, I don't know.
It was more Morgan Freeman in Malaysia.
All my voices are sexy, but it was fairly, I suppose, the deeper voice and slower, quite measured. And actually, Zof was saying I'm a little more measured in this season than the last two seasons. And initially, I think the first time I did it, I was thinking, oh, this is a bit too slow. And I wanted to be more like David Attenborough and be a little more excited, because I found, you know, that the stuff was so exciting, so interesting. And as you said, no, too much Charco, too much emotion, just be. And then it worked. And then when I heard it with the documentary, I could see that it worked, because, you know, you don't want to detract from the images that you're seeing. And there's a lot of interviews, so they are more animated and naturalistic.
Right, you're not like David Attenborough creeping up to your subject matter and whispering to the camera. But, you know, yes, this is, for me, one of the problems with documentary, the documentary form sometimes, which is that it purports to tell the only truth. And the voice is very important, because it's the voice of authority. It is the school teacher telling you, reading the school book, that this is the truth and that there's no way to dissent. Do you have a problem with that?
In what way?
I mean, do you feel that you should somehow deconstruct this voice or decenter the narrative so it doesn't become the only story that could be possibly told about this period?
It's hard, but, you know, it's hard to claim that, because, you know, again, like all filmmakers, we want the audience to be immersed into the story. This 48 hours that we present, right? And then everything, every second that we do has to grip them, hopefully. And then, we just apply this, this method. And then, but again, we never claim that we are the only truth. I mean, I never claim any of the documentaries that produced by Red Focus Films is the truth. But we always said it's a perspective of a history. You know, I think Fahmi Reza, I think, came out with his idea of a perspective of the independence through the 10 tahun sebelum merdeka, and we claim the same too. We just choose another perspective of the history, and that's what we do.
Okay, because you started off saying that it was the school books and the history that was presented to you that also was the basis or the impulse to somehow grapple with this history. I'm going to come back to that. I'm also going to be looking at some of the responses that you've had to this, and the hashtag is A Road to Nationhood. Remember, you can watch The Road to Nationhood Start Reclaimed on Astro On The Go. But don't go yet, because we're still with Let's Talk. With me, Sharad Kutin. Stay tuned.
The promise of independence by Vina Brook has given hope to the people of Sarawak that they will truly have a voice in the future of their land.
The Brook rule for 100 years. We had peace in this country, we had law and order, we expanded to a state. Sarawak was, in fact, a stable country. No more wars, no more fighting.
Since the first Raja, James Brook, started his rule in 1841, Sarawak had expanded and is finally on the path to become an independent nation. After 100 years, that idea is becoming a reality for many in Sarawak.
Welcome back to Let's Talk with Sharad Kutin. I'm here with Ahmad Yazid, who is the director of Road to Nationhood Start Reclaimed. We're also with Zof Azmi. He was a researcher, one of many, he says, on the documentary, and of course, Chako Vadaketh. Yazid, that clip we saw, could you put that in context? Where does that appear in the two-part documentary that you made for this third season of Road to Nationhood?
That appeared in at the end of the part one of the documentary. This is a pivotal moment for Sarawak. Sarawak at this point in time, in 1941, was the year that they were celebrated the centennial celebration. That means that the Brook dynasty had been there for 100 years, 1941, from 1841 until 1941. And there was another significance to the at this time in 1941, which the first, I guess, is drafted constitution was introduced in Sarawak under the Charles Vina Brook, which was the third Raja. So it was very important, because one of the most important part of nine cardinal rules that they pointed out was that the Brook will give independence to Sarawak in the near future. And that's their promise in 1941. Of course, the plot twist in part two.
Right. Okay, you know, Chaka, the voice you use in that moment is quite interesting. It's very stirring. It's stirring, and the script also very much a celebration of this moment. Was there another part of the story, that perhaps could that have been delivered in some other way other than one of a kind of celebration? Because there might have been people who were not happy with this change.
Yeah, I mean, there's many perspectives to it. But I think, on the whole, from what I understand, is the people of Sarawak actually loved the Brooks and liked them ruling them. And they viewed themselves as being independent under the Brooks. And, you know, James Brooks sort of took them away from the cruel Sultan of Brunei and his governor, who was not very good to the people of Sarawak. And subsequently, Charles Brooke protected them from the British coming in and exploiting them. So I think...
So the Brooks were much loved. And this, if you could help us understand this bit of history, because we often view colonialism through very dim lenses, right? It's not seen through rose-tinted lenses. There's very little nostalgia for most Malayans and most independent peoples for the colonial period. But the Brooks represented a colonial period, even though it wasn't strictly British.
Yes, I mean, I think to say it wasn't, it's fair to say it wasn't British, because the way the Brooks ran Sarawak, I don't know what other word to use, would have been quite different than if it was like a British governor in the tradition. I mean, you just compare what happened in Malaya, in the Malay states, versus what happened in Sarawak. There's a lot of, if you go around Sarawak today, and it was one of the things we went around interviewing people, you know, and you ask them, were the Brooks good for Sarawak? Were the Three Rajas good for Sarawak? You get actually a range of answers. Mm-hmm. So it's not as clear-cut as, like, they were great, full stop. It's like, well, they were good because this, but they were not so great because of other reasons. So what Chaco said is true. I mean, there was evidence that the people accepted the Brooks, you know, as their Rajas, and that Charles in particular was very determined to stop outside influences from exploiting the state. But on the flip side, you also saw very little development in Sarawak. Mm-hmm. And so there was, it wasn't quite a simple yes, no, great, not great.
Right. And that's not the typical narrative of our road to independence, because often the colonial authorities are cast as the bad guys in a story of a heroic emergence into independence. So how do you balance what is actually a very complex narrative in the Sarawak situation, right? Mm-hmm. With the Brooks, then the British, then, you know, with competing powers like the Brunei Sultanate there, you know, waiting in the wings, as it were. You also have Indonesia, you know, and you also have Philippines and their kind of claims on the territory. How do you make sense of all those different strands?
How?
I guess. Well, obviously, you did it.
Yeah, I know.
Obviously, you did it.
How? Well, yeah. As the filmmaker, as the producer, or one of the producers, in fact, our other producer is a Sarawakian, and I really followed a lot of what she wanted to say about her state, right? Her name is Lydia Lubon. But anyway, when we actually chose what to tell within the story, I will come across most of the time, I think cinematically, like how the stories, the research that we have collected and can be cinematically presented on television, and then sometimes it just surprises me, like, oh, this is my perspective, I guess. This is our perspective, I guess. Zob may not agree with me half the time, no, but
did you have arguments?
We did.
I tell you the way. If you could have watched us in the meeting rooms, in the research rooms, right? We have immense amount of debates because one researcher would have read one source, another researcher would have read another source, I would have read another source, and we would come in and we say, okay, this point in history, was it like this, was it like that? And then we start having these debates and arguments. But it's all, I suppose, in purpose of trying to figure out, well, I don't want to say the truth, because it makes it sound like it's truth with a capital T, but certainly provides Yazid an understanding, a more rounded understanding of the kind of things that happened.
But what about the current debate, and, you know, the current debate on the Malaysia Agreement in 1963, it's the you know, the social movement Sarawak for Sarawakians. Does that factor at all into the way and the decisions you make? Because it would seem that some people would want that history to justify a particular political conclusion. Did you ever feel at any point in time pressured by that context in which you were operating, Zoff?
Well, certainly. So there, one is MA63, but going back to a previous documentary, the original federal constitution for Malaya and the Malay rights in there, those were two things where I guess we could do a one-hour documentary on each of that, right? You know, how the Malay rights got into it and what are actually the state rights in MA63. What I began to appreciate as I did more research into it is that, and if you ever try to read like the Malaysia Agreement, and then you'll appreciate that you need someone who is a lawyer to sit down and really go through it and really explain, you know, what is there, what isn't there.
Well, you have one lawyer on your team, Chanto.
But I don't think he's... Have you read the Malaysian?
No, I haven't. Actually, that's one of the things that I, when doing this, I think, oh, I wish I could see the original documents and how they came to this conclusion, because I get to see what they finally distilled down and said, okay, this is the story you want to tell.
Right. I mean, one of the things, of course, is the language that you have to use. Yeah. You use the word like state. Now, somebody from the peninsula will say states are like Johor, Terengganu, Perlis, and Sarawak is a state equivalent to a Johor, Terengganu, and Perlis. But of course, the Sarawakians don't see the word state or understand the word state in the same way. For them, the state is a territory, one of three territories that came together to make up Malaysia. Four territories that came to make Malaysia, you know,
initially, in
1963 before Singapore left. Did you grapple, Yazid, with the language that you had to use?
Okay, we did. I did ask around. I mean, we had advisors for the show, and then you know, although the state now, as today's, the word is can be a bit controversial, but back then it was not. You know, it was never an issue. You know, they called themselves, "This is my country." This is before Malaysia agreement, before the formation of Malaysia. This is my country, and this is Sarawak. This is country of Sarawak, you know, rather than a state. So the idea of a state, I think, after the formation of Malaysia was not really a problem. At least this is based on what we've researched and what we've been advised to say. And then only later, only after this whole thing, again, we made this documentary in the context of today. So I did have agenda on things that needed to be put in, like freedom of religion, development of Sarawak state after formation of Malaysia, and also the preservation of culture.
You could hold that thought. Yes. I'm speaking to Ahmad Yazid. He's the director of Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. Along with him is Azof Azmi, as well as Chako Vadaket. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with Sharad Kutin. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with Sharad Kutin. Today we're talking about the state of Sarawak, and in fact, and what's precipitating it is, of course, the release of a new documentary, the two-parter called Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. It opened on Saturday on Nat Geo, and then very soon after it aired on Astro Awani, just after this show, in fact. So very excited by the emergence of this new documentary, part of, you know, what's a series now, seven documentaries. We are going to Kuching right now to get a Sarawakian perspective on the context in which such a documentary was made and also, of course, aired. On the line, we have Anne Teo. She's from Rise of Sarawak Efforts, or ROSE. It's an NGO that works on Sarawakian issues. Thank you so much, Anne, for joining us. I want to begin with the issue of the misunderstandings that are very common about Sarawak, and how do you think it's playing into this debate about MA63?
Hi, Sharad. Yes. If you mean the debate about MA63, I think when you bring up the issue, it means different things to different groups of people. And autonomy at the moment, you know, it can mean, number one, secession. Number two, maybe decentralization or devolution of powers in the context of a federation. So there's no common understanding among Sarawakians.
But can you
about
tell us
what MA63 means?
Right, but is there a common sentiment that's driving all this and the conversations? Is there a feeling perhaps of displacement or a feeling of marginalization that is giving the impetus to this conversation?
Yes, definitely the common understanding of general people is that it means our state rights have been eroded. We need to get back our rights. You know, that's the general understanding that people have, getting back our rights.
Now, Anne, when you think about the way in which people in the peninsula talk about Sarawak, were there things that you notice about how they imagine Sarawak as a territory or as a people or cultures, their own dynamics? Was there a tendency to project peninsula dynamics onto Sarawak, for instance?
Yeah, definitely. I think the understanding that the people here generally have is that it is a state. I mean, in the last September 16, you hear our PM saying that, you know, we want to accord equal status to Sarawak and so on. But I think all this while we've been working on the premise that we are just a state. And, you know, we have the state leaves, federal leaves, and I'm sure the civil service and the executive have been working on that kind of understanding. So when you say equal partners, it's really, again, hard to understand. How do we operate as equal partners, you know?
Now, is this really a kind of elite politics and people, and this is some of the critique that's been made about the MA63 debate, that really it's not coming from the ground up. It's essentially a bid by those who are already in the elite of Sarawak who are trying to perhaps wrestle more power for themselves so they have much more autonomy in dealing with Sarawakian affairs.
It's very much an urban conversation and an urban debate. I think people in the rural areas, you know, will have not much of an understanding about MA63. So it's still evolving. Like, this conversation needs to be done. Public awareness needs to be raised. I think there are people making efforts to increase awareness, but it's all can be different perspectives. Like, you know, they have different perspectives of what it means.
And finally, Anne, do you think the media has played a particular role in shaping views of Sarawak, whether it's the media in terms of news or the media in terms of popular culture? And do you see a problem in the way in which they've framed Sarawak?
I don't watch much national TV, but I believe that media plays a very important role, especially in this time and age. The current issues that are happening in Sarawak needs to be aired more so that people in the West or Peninsula Malaysia understand what we are going through and what we are, even this political awareness that people are coming to. I think media has a big part to play. If it's on national TV, then the understanding would spread further.
Right, thank you so much, Anne. That was Anne Teo of Rise of Sarawak Efforts. It's an NGO based in Kuching. ROSE is the acronym. Turn back to our studio audience, Ahmad Yazid, Zof Azmi and Chakravartiketh, because the team behind, or part of the team behind that wonderful documentary, the two-parter, the role and power of the media in telling the story or shaping the conversation. Do you think your documentary, Yazid, can and will change the conversation about Sarawak as part of the Federation?
I hope so. You know, then again, you know, how they interpret the story. I mean, we got criticism too for the film. But I hope so. You know, again, what you see on television is only 20% of what I know. So we don't have enough time to really go deep into certain subjects. And again, these subjects are chosen specifically by the filmmakers because we feel there are many factors to it. We feel that, you know, this is quite cinematic. It can make people go through this roller coaster ride, I call it.
And an emotional one?
Emotional one, absolutely, because it's film and it's not paper, it's not writings and stuff. So it has to have that emotion. So the use of music and the use of the footage, the use of the
Chaco's voice.
And Chaco's voice, of course, the Morgan Freeman voice. and then also the events that happen. You know, we specifically chose part one to be a happy one because we're gonna break down the emotion in part two, beginning of part two, because everything crumbled.
Okay, now without giving away any spoilers, Zof, if the conversation is changing, how would you like to see it change? In what direction would you like to see it change?
I mean, something that Anne said just now, it's like, she said it was an urban conversation and you're not quite sure whether those in the rural areas understand what MA63 is about. Now, replace the word MA63 with the Malaysia plan, in 60-61, right? And you hear the same thing being said, that the urban Malays understanding of the Malaysia plan and the Chinese in the urban areas understanding the Malaysia plan, and then the Dayaks in the more rural areas, there was an unequal understanding of it. And even, I think, at one point, and a little spoiler, one of them made the comment that one of the chiefs said, well, you know, whatever the British tell us, we're going to go along with that plan. So it feels like it's history kind of repeating itself in a certain way. I think if somebody watches a documentary like this and understands the context of what things were happening like in the 50s and 60s, and they get a better understanding through that lens of what's happening now, I think that would be a good thing.
Right, okay. We'll be back with a deeper look at the history and how we make it, how we manufacture it, all in aid of understanding our present condition. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me in the studio is Ahmad Yazid. He's the director of Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. With him, Zof Azmi, who's was one part of the research team, and from what we understand, a very vocal and, you know, sometimes contentious research team. Also with us, Chako Vadaketh, who narrated the documentary. Very important because he carried with it the emotions that the director wanted us to feel as we were listening to the story unfold. Now, so much of what you did, Yazid, was about history, and I know you use archival footage. I'm going to look at some of that archival footage, and we're going to have a conversation about how exactly and what exactly archival footage is and can tell us about the past.
Rombongan Bangsa-Bangsa Bersatu mengesahkan adanya proses ini di wilayah Borneo. Di dalam laporannya, U Tan melafazkan harapannya semoga penduduk-penduduk itu mencapai cita-citanya dalam Malaysia.
Okay, so that was a bit of archival footage that was used in the documentary we were talking about. Yazid, can you tell us who produced that newsreel? Because it sounds like one of those newsreels that you might have gone to the cinema to watch in the old days.
Yeah. That was done by Film Negara. At that time. So I think it was post-formation of Malaysia where they gathered all the information and then they would show it on television or in cinema, I guess, at that time. So it was produced by them. And we've used so many of this archive footage throughout our documentaries. And it was not just from Film Negara. We use RTM, we use many archive agencies from England. You know,
what about Indonesia? I say Indonesia because, Zof, if you remember in that little clip, there was a banner that says, no to guided democracy. Because that was one of the slogans that Sukarno used. And Sukarno, of course, the man who opposed the formation of Malaysia as an imperialist plan, right? How did you and did you have to factor in the Indonesian point of view in telling this story?
Well, apart from this documentary, Sarawak and Reclaim, there was another documentary that aired earlier this year about konfrontasi, so the konfrontasi between Malaysia and Indonesia. And in that, I think, I mean, you have to watch it, really.
Okay, my question is very simple. Can we be honest and fair to all sides in that conversation? It's a very heated one about the shape of Southeast Asia going forward after the Second World War, decolonizing, fighting with imperialist powers who are trying also to carve out their spheres of interest in, you know, in the inevitable, independence movements that were kind of spawning new nations. Did we tell that story? Did we give the Indonesian side at all?
Yes, I believe we did. I mean, after looking at the final product.
Not as much as we should.
More in konfrontasi. The focus is Sarawak.
No, right? It's quite tough to... When you say, is it fair, right? And this becomes this very difficult subjective thing. I think one thing that Yazid does well when he does these documentaries is that he has the sense of... he wants the story to go one way, and then the other way, and then this way, and sort of zigzag. And so what he does is he has a pro-argument, and then he has, like, a con-argument that pushes it the other way. And you get to see different sides of the argument, But does that mean we catch all the voices with a documentary that's only 1 hour long, maybe, or even 2 hours? Certainly, for the first documentary we did, we had some criticism that there was not enough voices from the left, the so-called radicals of 1940s and 50s Malaya. And I think our response to that was, my gosh, we only have this much time.
And we had Dato' On.
And we had Dato' On.
Okay, you know, Chaka, I mean, yeah. You're a man of theatre. You know, I know you act, and you're very well versed with the presentation of a story, right? It has to have an arc. It has to have drama, even to convey a truth, right? Do you think, in your estimation, that we are coming closer to understanding the truth of the debates and struggles of that period, and especially in this particular documentary?
Absolutely. I think I learned a lot, and, you know, just voicing these documentaries over the last 3 years, and particularly now in Sarawak. And I think Sarawak is something that most of us in the peninsula know very little about. And what strikes me most is the images that you see, the archival footage and the faces of the Sarawakian people and their longhouses. And, you know, it's really, you know, I can just see it in my head now, what I saw there. And and the Raja Brooks coming in, because you sort of know about it, but it's in the back of your head. But just seeing it actually there, and the last Raja saying goodbye and leaving, and having sold Sarawak off to the British colonialists, and leaving the people of Sarawak in shock because they felt they'd been betrayed by their Raja.
This is a very important scene. This scene that you're watching right now, mm-hmm. because this really talk about how ignorant the Malayan leaders at that time, and you know, how they didn't know enough about Sarawak, but already having to want them to be part of this idea of Malaysia. So one of my favorite scenes.
Okay. Yeah, Musa Hitam doesn't mince his words.
No, he didn't at all.
Can I sort of loud. Just make a quick comment about that? Because part one of the Sarawak documentary, one of the people we interview is Jason Brooke, who is a descendant of the Brooks, and of course. He says, I mean, he's done a lot of research into this, and he really knows his history.
And he probably would have been the Raja if the dynasty still existed.
Yes. Now,
the Conference of Rulers would never look the same.
That's very true.
But of course, because this documentary is airing on National Geographic, National Geographic have a, what did they approve? Fact checker.
Yeah, in Washington, D.C., that had to go through every line that we talk about.
Yes. So we were. Every line, we were literally challenged to say, do you have evidence of this? And one of the points they made was that Jason Brooke would be biased towards his ancestors.
Oh, and you think that that's a reasonable criticism?
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
Before we wrap up this part of the conversation, any regrets, Yazid? Any regrets? If you could cut this again, would you cut it any differently? I know it's still very early, and, you know, and Zof, would you have a minority report? Could you make a different documentary, knowing what you know?
A dissenting judgment.
Yeah, that's right, a dissenting judgment.
That's very legal.
Yes, no, it first.
Not at all. I never regretted everything that I've done before. But what I would like to do next is bringing a different perspective. You know, there's so many stories, like Star Wars, right? There's so many perspective to one story. So that's what I would like to do with the documentary that I produce in the future.
Right. So there could be a kind of Han Solo exclusive type, you know.
Because there's episode. So many figures that pop up. I mean, here we got into the Rajas, but there are these Temenggongs, Jua, and you know, they're just fascinating people who I don't remember learning about them in my history books, but suddenly seeing them, gosh, these people existed.
Stephen Kalong Ningkan, that was Malayan leaders were against him being a chief minister. Mm. Why was, you know, I would love to talk about that and how he was ousted in 66. Because
after 63, though.
No, that's
the Jua was amazing. Everybody included.
Okay, so there are a lot of characters, the cast of thousands, maybe just hundreds or dozens, but still not given equal opportunity to surface in our school books, surface in the popular imagination through our media, and perhaps now long forgotten because that generation is dying off and is not around to remind us that we have forgotten certain things. So, very quickly, anything that you feel, that you research, that you wish could have been made into more or could have been the subject of a scene maps in the documentary?
Well, I will just say there's something called the Malay plot, which is something that happened in Sarawak in 1860s, late 59. And then I'll leave it at that, and you can Google it.
Okay, there's the Malay plot.
Yes.
Okay, we'll be back with more on this amazing documentary released on Nat Geo, and then, of course, also on Astro Awani. Just last Saturday, you can go to Astro On The Go and get a view of that. So stay tuned for the last part of our show on Let's Talk with Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. We're talking about this documentary called The Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. And we have in the room the team, or part of the team that made it. And that's Ahmad Yazid, who is the director. We also have Zov Azmi, who was part of the research team. And Chako Vardakes, who gave his voice to telling this rather stirring story. Now, we ended on something, Zov, you said just now, the Malay plot. But there, I say, in today's Malaysia, there are many plots that we and there's a lot of conspiracy theories. We're not going to go into that. I want to talk about something that's happened very recently, Yazid, which is the decision by the government of the day to maintain a ban on Lelaki Komunis Terakhir, which is a documentary, or a mockumentary, if you like to call it that, a very complex attempt at telling the story of the Second World War, and especially the central role of Chin Ping, who was the leader of the Communist Party of Malaya, that ban has been maintained, and which means that today the documentary maker is still not free. You might be free, but the situation in which we operate, or you operate, is still shackled by the possibility of somebody closing you down because they don't like your narrative. Does that concern you?
This is the thing. I think we're maturing society. I mean, we don't understand that it's okay to have differing views. It's okay to have a perspective, you know. And unfortunately, we're still living, you know, under this 1948, I think. It's a 40s
law
oh, yeah. I think, like, mm-hmm. about this banning of films and stuff. And I don't know why we're still having it today. So us as society, I guess the government too at some point, just don't understand that it's okay to have different perspective. And then the Lucky Communist Archive, I just watched bits of it, and I know that it's a different perspective of the World War II and how the fight that the communists or Xi Jinping was doing. So it's one perspective which is okay. And then we have this Tengku Abdul Rahman perspective, which was also okay, because it's not like we're saying Merdeka was on the 29th of August. We're done. You know, I don't think anyone would argue about when Merdeka is. Everyone would agree that there was one thing that happened. Yes, everyone knows that we achieved Merdeka. But the idea behind Merdeka was not started by UMNO. It was actually by the left. It was hijacked. So then, again, this issue of not being okay with perspective. I think perspective is okay. Everyone has its own right to have a certain views on certain things.
Right. So when you turned to historians to aid you in your research, did you find a plurality of views that, you know, some celebrating the left or, you know, acknowledging the role of the left, others, you know, perhaps hiding it from view in telling the story of Malaysia's emergence as an independent nation? Did you have to sift through a lot of stuff?
I think the one place where this we really saw this happen was when we were trying to tell the history of Singapore, the role of the Barisan Sosialis left wing party, and then PAP, who was also a socialist party but considered more at least more centrist, and you certainly saw quite a lot of variation. It was one of those, I think, when we did that part of the history of A Road to Nationhood, I think it was the first time where we had to say we're having historians saying actually quite different things for the
contradicting
same.
Each other.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you know, casting the light in really quite different ways. And I think we had this discussion whether we should just put the two even almost contradictory things together next to each other and let the audience decide.
And did you do that?
Well, I mean,
yes and no. Yeah, we did present more of a PAP Lee Kuan Yew's perspective on that part. But again, we kind of like unfolded a little bit later that, you know, there's another agenda behind what he did. But yes, we do as much as possible, but we always have to stick to the spine, and the spine has to be the main narrative. But whatever the branches that we're going to go we're going to go out of it, we're going to have to come back to it, because then the audience will not know what kind of ride that they're on. And we need to be able to be really firm about, this is the ride, you're going to go up and down and left and right, that's it. I'm not going to make you go on the center or whatever. So this is the ride you're going
to
like.
So you have to be very disciplined in your choices, because you work within the limitations of time. I know you shoot endless amounts of footage and choose just a little bit of that in order to tell this particular story. Chako, you are part, and as a theatre practitioner, part of this effort to tell stories. Do you think, and this is a broader question, that we are entering a new phase, that people are going to be accepting, what you have to say, differences of opinion, that we can tell different stories, can have different heroes even?
Absolutely. I'm very excited about that, that we can. I think the lens is becoming wider, and I think as a more mature society, we have to say that we can agree to disagree, and that you might have one perspective, I have another perspective, and it might contradict each other, but we accept that we have legitimate perspectives in looking at the same issue or the same historical event.
In Road to Nationhood, the way we portray Chin Peng is, I guess, as villain, I suppose. But certainly when we're doing the research on Chin Peng, it's like, I think this is a really interesting character. There's enough in here that you could tell an entire story,
from a mini-series.
From his perspective.
And maybe that would be your next documentary, because I think, and perhaps you would have to wait for Lelaki Communist Ahe to have the ban lifted from it, though I must say, I think in the age of, the internet, anybody who wants to see it has already seen it. I mean, the bans are actually almost impossible to put in place.
Yes, bans are good PR, right?
They're just a show of power.
Something that I find so valuable about the series is that they've recorded people who've lived through these times and who have since passed on. So it's invaluable that we have their oral histories.
Absolutely.
And I think in this series, I think that the voice and the face that really jumps out at you is Anthony Brooke, who was the Rajamuda at the time that Britain took over Sarawak. And he was trying to come back because the people were saying, we want our Raja. And he was not allowed to enter. And they interview him and he's talking about it. He's a frail old man. And since then, he's passed on. So I think that's so amazing. Exciting.
That is amazing, in fact. And I think Lelaki Communist Ahe also, in documenting the Malay regiment of the Communist Party, also capturing the voices of those key actors at the later stage of their lives, many of them who have passed away. But last word from you, Yazid, about documentary making in this country. What would your advice be to young people aspiring to make documentaries? Where should they go for their stories?
I think the perception has to change first. People still, I think majority of us still think that documentary is boring, And I'm glad that at least for Road to Nationhood, we got comments saying that, wow, this is like a movie, or this is like a ride, like I mentioned to you, the roller coaster ride. They could feel it, even though they're talking heads. They're not like Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, right? So, I'm glad that, people are starting to be aware that documentary can be interesting. And then from there, then I think documentary can be perceived well. And then and I really hope, which is not really a good movement right now to see a lot more young people making documentaries, but I really hope a lot of them starting to appreciate it, then I think we can move into talking about how they can go about doing it. Because very little still think that documentary is famous. You want to become famous, you want to look good, you want to score some actress, so...
Okay.
Very good. Oh, is that why you want to do documentary?
So you don't do documentary.
This is the subject of another show altogether. Thank you so much, Yazid, Zoff and Chako. I've been speaking to Ahmad Yazid, director of Road to Nationhood, Sarawak Reclaimed. Also, Zoff Azmi, who's researcher on the project, and Chako Vadaketh, who lent his voice as the narrator of that documentary. Amazing stuff. You can send your feedback to me at letstalk@astro.com.my. We can carry on this conversation and see where it goes. Remember, you join me every night at 10 p.m. on Let's Talk with Sharad Kutan, only on Astro Awani.